The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, the government's Housing for All programme could be derailed by a slump in construction activity. According to the CSO, construction activity as a whole fell by 2.7% between July and September this year, but residential house building fell by 16.2%. Housing Minister Dara Brian has, as you heard, described the Housing for All plan as radical and realistic, but just how realistic are the government's housing targets in the light of this drop? Now, we are joined by Mel Reynolds, architect and policy analyst. Mel, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Why the drop?
Well, I think that the drop is, for anyone involved in the sector, is very predictable. What we're seeing is, I mean, sentiment is very negative. Construction PMI is below 50. So, and you know, all you have to do is open a paper, listen to a radio show, and you'll hear all the negative sentiment about building. Costs and inflation is a real problem at the moment. Now, there is a certain amount of gouging going on by suppliers as well, I think, but the construction inflation is very real and it's hitting every project that's out there. So that's inflation. When you look at the numbers and the feasibility for residential, is a real problem.
The profit margins that are to be found on housing, everything depends really on the cost of the site originally. And if people overpaid, I just say tough, you overpaid. You shouldn't have been building on that site if you overpaid for it, because you can't expect to make a decent profit when, you know, everyone is a bit pushed by inflation. But what is the normal profit margin on a site that's properly priced?
Well, I suppose just to look at the dynamics of this, say, for example, a typical apartment, apartments are far more vulnerable to cost rises and price falls than houses. So a typical apartment that would sell for €411,000 would have a site value of about 46 and a margin of 13%, which is about the same again. Now, that margin is quite high, but it's there to cover developers. The financiers usually require that to cover them in the event of price falls. Now, if you look at that sort of, you know, you input all your figures, you start off with your sales price, take away VAT, your costs, your margin, you're left with the site value. If when costs increase by 5%, your site value or your margin falls by about 22%. So it has a huge effect on the bottom, a much more amplified effect on the bottom line. Mm. And currently we've seen in 1 year increases, cost increases of around about 15%. So what that does is, if you're sitting down and if your sales price hasn't changed, your site value has dropped by almost, it has dropped from about 45,000 down to 4,000 euros.
But Mel, I mean, builders always do this calculation. What's my site worth based on what I can get for the apartment? And I have so many apartments on this site, and therefore my site is worth this.
Sure.
Surely, you know, the builder should be concerned about what he paid for the site. Many of them bought the sites at rock bottom. So, you know, they work out the site is worth 46,000. I actually paid €2,500 for the site.
No, you're absolutely right.
What am I complaining about?
No, you're absolutely right. And say, for example, when Cherrywood, where large entities bought there, the site values were much lower than they are today. The difficulty is, in the last 2 to 3 years, if you went out and if you bought a site for around €50,000 per site, you have no choice but to wait. You can't proceed, because if you start building now, and the other aspect to this is, if sales prices flatten or drop, you're in difficulty, because a 10% fall in sales prices on those numbers I just quoted gives you a 68% fall in your site value. So the difficulty we have in when it comes to speculative development, what people are trying to do is forecast what's going to happen in 2 years' time. And if it gets too uncertain, and the difficulty with that is, it's a bit like you or me going into work for 2 years and then discovering we owe somebody money at the end of it. We haven't made a penny. So when things get as uncertain as they are, and when we see the trajectory, basically inflation and price are like two tongs of a pincers. And when those two start moving, one moving up, the tide of inflation starts rising and the price starts flattening or going down, you're in serious trouble. All of a sudden, you can see not only your site dropping, but your margin dropping as well. Yeah. So you have a real problem.
Again, I go back to what the people in Cherrywood Hines paid for all of this stuff. They paid peanuts, and now they're attributing a site value because of these calculations you talk about, which makes the site value much higher. And then they're saying, oh, well, if we do this, the site value will fall. Sunshine, you bought it cheap. Take a bit of a fall and get the apartments going. You will have a market for them.
But I suppose the point about this is that if you're dealing with a private market, it's very difficult to coerce people to go off and do something in that respect. Really, what we should have is when the government have housing policy and they say, we're going to build this. In actual fact, what they're saying is we're expecting somebody else to build this. They've no control on it. And because
they do.
The state...
Hang on a second, Mel. I'm really angered by this, that people get planning permissions under the SHDs, where you had to have 100 units or more. You got permission. And then what did you do? You sat on it. I'm not talking about you personally. Developers sat on them. Didn't build what they had permission to build, even though they had water connections, they were close to the grid and so on, they had electrical connections, they just sat on them. And why? Why did they sit on them? There was a market there. We have a housing shortage. Why did they sit on them?
Well, there's a market there, and for a number of different reasons. A lot of people aren't developers. It's their speculative activity to do with land values. That's being looked at in official policy, etc. But the big missing point in this is what we don't have is a plan B, is when, construction has always been cyclical, and anyone you meet on any site will tell you, okay, the minute rates go up, it has an effect within 3 months of activity across the board. So, but what we don't have at the moment and what we had years ago was a proper state building program where the state could start ramping up and building on their own land, using normal builders going out to tender to do it, to try and level out the peaks and troughs in the market. We don't have that at the moment. So, for example, if you have a builder who's tendering for a project now for 100 units, the market forces would suggest whoever owns the site and is promoting it won't proceed with that. They're looking around going, how do I keep my 50 or 60 guys going? Let's tender for, Dunleary Rathdown or Dublin City Council. Are they building 100 units somewhere else? Let's look at it. The difficulty we have is that in the first 6 months of this year, the four Dublin local authorities completed no houses at all. They bought 15. Approved housing bodies built 80. This is in the entire four Dublin local authorities, and they bought about 310. So the difficulty we have is that all of our housing strands, with the exception of self-builders, are actually totally dependent on private market forces. So, looking at you probably have another program in terms of the site dynamics and sitting on land and vacant site tax. But when we head towards winter with higher rates, higher inflation, and prices softening and softening sentiment, people will pull back because the sentiment turns. We don't have a plan B, unfortunately. And what the government has been doing since about 2017 is actually promoting apartment developments, which are really difficult to fund. So that's why out of, 96% of all apartment development in Dublin are forward funded. They're purchased in advance, or sites are purchased or forward funded in advance, either by the state or approved housing bodies or funds, is because we've de-risked the banking sector and funding isn't available.
Explain to people who are maybe not that familiar with how this all works. Back in the day, and it still happens where housing estates of three-bed semis are built, that you build phase one, you sell phase one, that gets you money in, you build phase two, you probably jack up the price on phase two, you sell that, then you build phase three, you jack up the price a bit on that, and then and so on and so forth. And that's how it used to work. Now with planning permissions, you have a site and a council will tell you, sorry, it's not dense enough. You can't put just 10 houses there. You've got to put 100 units there because that's the footprint. And then you can't sell anything until you've built the 100.
This is one of the real underlying problems we've had in policy since about 2017. And we've seen it with the reduction in apartment standards, the reduction of cores, the promotion of corridor dual aspect, dual access, double-sided corridors, reduction in heights, increase in heights for apartment developments. You're absolutely right. The housing model or a cellular apartment model, you can build in phases. And the beauty of that is, if you mentioned their phase one, phase two, phase three, if the market softens and goes negative like it is at the moment, you can just hold off and wait. And you say, okay, let's wait a year or two. You stop at rising, and a lot of estates are built in phases like that. So it's inherently safer. You have less exposure. The difficulty at the moment is that the state has sort of put all their eggs into the basket of much higher apartments, long corridors, and it's very difficult to build half a corridor. So effectively, in order to get these things off the ground, you have to sell the entire block.
But so if this gives you,
if your purchasers...
Mel, just in terms of livability, the idea of a long corridor, as anyone who's been in some of the major hotels will know that's how it works. You've got a long corridor, you've got bedrooms on both sides of that corridor, which means that each bedroom has, you know, it has a view. But it means that in apartments, only one side of the apartment has a view, has fresh air, because these are the single aspect. It's not a good way to live.
Well, it's they're single aspect apartments. No, single aspect apartments are fine. The difficulty is if you've north facing and south facing ones, you end up with you know, apartments that can overheat and apartments that don't get direct sunlight into them. It's actually, you know, a well designed apartment can work in any configuration. The difficulty we have is that we have an awful lot of apartment sites that probably can't be activated unless prices increase significantly. And the when you look at these numbers, particularly for apartments, if you have a 20% increase in cost, which is back to our original point, sales prices have to increase by 12% to keep everything the same, to keep that equilibrium, and it just isn't happening. But there's actually a positive in all of this in falling commencements, which is to do with our carbon footprint. And in actual fact, the Green Building Council brought out a very interesting policy document building towards a zero carbon Ireland 2030 a few weeks ago. And in that, they looked at three models for our construction sector. Now, construction in itself is responsible for about 37% of all emissions. And an awful lot of that happens at construction stage. So by the time you put your key in the door, you've used about a third of a lifetime carbon of that building has already happened. So we need to, the whole industry needs to focus on that a bit more. But they've actually looked at housing policy, and we're on a collision course on housing policy on one side and our carbon ambitions on the other.
By the way, Mel, we had Don Loreen of Ecosem on yesterday talking about their new formulation of cement that would reduce carbon dramatically using different materials than have been used before, and they've tested them and so on. They have the same durability, longevity and so on. So, you know, maybe the industry will embrace those new technologies. Concrete is always going to be needed. A cement of some kind is always going to be needed. If you can make it low carbon, you're on a winner.
Yeah, it is. The interesting thing is if you keep it three stories or below, you have an ability to remove cement almost entirely from a build, believe it or not, and you can go with timber. So if we look at the embodied carbon, if you try and keep it lower height and higher density, all of a sudden that feeds into the whole thing about construction materials that you're using as well. You can use things like ground screws, which are like big screws that screw into the ground. They've been around for years, and you can literally sit your building on top of those and omit the need for large amounts of concrete in a slab, and you can reduce it. But I mean, in terms of our carbon footprint of the construction sector, we really need to keep our new build numbers down to about 21,000, which is less, significantly less than the government in their current housing policy has. And we need to get the balance, the 14,000 other units from our existing vacant housing and also from over the shop. Okay. So this is where the model that the Green Building Council have suggested is to build our new builds significantly better in terms of embodied carbon, but also concentrate on our vacant stock.
And there's one comment among many that have come in. It's a bit disturbing. There's only one reason for a slowdown in building, and that is over-reliance on certification from the state. It's too expensive to build under those terms. The state doesn't certify anything. I mean, it gets the professionals like yourself to certify.
Yeah, I don't understand that, to be honest.
No, I don't. Anyway, I just threw it out there because he said it. He says he's an architect, but he doesn't seem to know what he's talking about. Anyway, Mel, we have to leave it there. Mel Reynolds, architect and policy analyst, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.